Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. How are you all doing? This is the BackyardLavrish.com, and one of the things that we are doing here is we're lavrishing every Wednesday, 8 p.m. We lavrish here. This call was established by Miss Margaret Marshall, who really just wanted to leave a footprint on some of the things that were important to her and other Jamaicans and friends of Jamaicans as it relates to Jamaica and how she remembers it and some of the things that she just really wanted to share with everyone. And I just wanted to just welcome everyone to the show. Again, we have our site that's being launched at BackyardLavrish.com. And for those of you that are Jamaican, you know that lavrish just kind of means to share and enlighten each individual that you're speaking to about a particular subject. And, of course, tonight we're going to lavrish with Mr. Leigh Nunes. And he's a retired senior, a Jamaican expatriate, a world traveler, and a member of the Ask a Senior panel, which is going to be on the BackyardLavrish.com. He's going to share information tonight about, well, his role in building the Panama Canal, as well as some, you know, interesting stories that he's going to revisit with us with regards to his grandparents. Just a little history on Mr. Nunes. He was born in St. Andrews, Jamaica, September 1933. He resides in Newton Square. He's immigrated to Brooklyn, New York, and in 1952, and after obtaining his secondary schooling at the then private St. George College. He graduated from St. John's University, New York, in 1957 and served in the United States Air Force from 1958 to 1962 as a financial and accounting specialist. He retired after 30 years with the Domino Sugar Company and now spends his time doing volunteer tax consulting for the elderly. And as first vice president of the Oratorio Society of Queens, New York, he's really enjoying that, as well as also a member of the Choir of Brooklyn and Queens, who recently performed for the Pope. That's really neat when you really think about that. The Pope visited New York, and he actually performed for him. And he's a world traveler, so, of course, we say that whenever you're busy and you're doing things, you're certainly not a couch potato. So that's a wonderful thing. Just want to find out, we have someone that's on here that has joined us at 718. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good. You sound pretty good here in New York.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Thank you.
I actually
want you to know that I also just decided, I said, let me just see what happens if I Google his name, what comes up.
Oh.
And actually, St. John's came up, and Leigh F. Nunes came up, 73, something about St. John's CBA. What does that stand for?
Oh, in those days, we graduated as a Bachelor of Commerce, CVA.
Oh.
Nowadays, I think they changed that to Bachelor of Science.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That kind of dates me back a little bit. But that's strange that you found me on the Google.
Right, yeah, it was pretty neat. I wasn't exactly sure, you know, if I had the right person, but I says, well, it seems like, you know, it might be. I'll ask him, so that's pretty neat.
Good thing I didn't fudge any of the bio there, or else probably you wouldn't find me. So what do you think Margaret is doing now, floating along the high seas, I think, huh?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
For that don't know, Miss Margaret is the host of the show, and she's on a little hiatus right now, vacationing in St. Thomas, and so she's left us to man the port here in the United States and just kind of continue the labrish while she's vacationing. But believe me, if she could be on, she'd certainly be on. So they must
well,
not
you
have.
Well, I wouldn't put it past her that she's not listening on some radio there, some shortwave radio or something.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah,
yeah,
well, so now what does it mean? It says Jamaican expatriate. Does that mean that you were in the service?
No, you know, expatriates, if when we leave one country to go to another, you automatically are labeled. Doesn't sound like a nice label, but that's what it is. We become expatriates when we leave one country and reside in, take up residence in another.
Oh.
So, for instance, in my case, as many other Jamaican seniors, as we're expatriates from Jamaica.
Ah, okay.
So it sounds a little bit weird, but nowadays it's better to be labeled like that than some of these other immigration tags that people put on you, you know.
Yeah. And so you came here in 1952.
Oh, yeah, I remember it well. Yes, I came to this country on a Pan-American, no, that's a lie. That's half a lie. I came on KLM, landed in Miami, and got processed and jumped on a Pan American jet to LaGuardia Airport.
Mm.
And in those days, LaGuardia was a little bit antiquated in that people would meet you right up. Right at the plane door, you know. Nowadays, you're not even allowed to go on the tarmac.
Yeah.
But then your family could come right up to the plane and meet you.
Mm.
So,
well, now, why New York? Why did you go to New York? Because, I mean, you know, Jamaicans are everywhere. A lot of them are in Florida, and, you know, we got quite a few here. Why did you select New York?
Well, because my mother was in New York.
Ah, okay.
So I came to meet her.
Oh, okay.
To see her, yeah.
Okay.
But like as you say, Jamaicans go, you know, they go anywhere. They go to Chicago. They go to Los Angeles. They go to Miami. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
So, and tonight, if given the chance, I'd like to say a few words on the fact that you're likely to find Jamaican, as you say, expatriates. I say Jamaican seniors are their ancestors, literally, anywhere in the world, but nowhere more likely than in Latin America, from the Caribbean Basin. Central America, from Nicaragua, Honduras, Costa Rica, Panama, to Colombia, which leads me into the Panama connection.
Okay.
So we'll call this connection Panama Revisited, in that in my own case, for instance, my grandparents, on my mother's side, my grandfather and my grandmother left Jamaica for Panama during the, you might say, at around the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, young men, particularly in Jamaica, headed for Panama to participate in the greatest engineering event the world had ever seen at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they did that because it offered industrious young men an opportunity that they couldn't pass up. You know, they went to participate in the building of the Panama Canal. You've heard of the Panama Canal,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, prior to the building of the canal, ships, vessels had to go all the way down to Cape Horn, that's the tip of South America, to cross over to the Pacific. And after the building of the canal, they were able to just go right through the Panama Canal. And in fact, save many months off that journey, if they even reached, because it was very dangerous in those days to travel the high seas and go down to Panama to the Pacific and go over to the Far East. So this was really a monumental event. But to continue the connection, my grandparents, after the Panama Canal was built and opened, it opened in 1914. A lot of the people that went down to build or to help and participate in building the canal remained there, or they went to the neighboring countries that I mentioned before in Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, they raised their families. In my case, again, all of my aunts and uncles were born in Panama.
Mm.
And my grandparents never came back to Jamaica, for instance, for me or my mother. So we stayed in Jamaica, whereas they stayed in Panama. Some of the other people that went down to this to the building of the canal went to you know, Central American countries like Costa Rica. There's a real colony of Jamaicans down in Costa Rica,
mm-hmm.
as well as Panama. So, yeah, it's quite a history there of people from the West Indies, not just Jamaica, but you'll find in Panama people from all of the British West Indies, for that matter.
Mm.
But mainly we're talking tonight about the fact that you will find a lot of people of Jamaican heritage in Panama. And Donna, when you go there and you hear them speak,
yeah,
you think you're in Jamaica, because they, even though the main language is Spanish, when they speak English, they sound like they're still in Jamaica. You know,
right.
They never lost the Jamaican accent.
Right, right.
So it's quite a thing. I remember even working at Domino Sugar. There was a lady there. And first time when I saw her, her appearance, I thought maybe this person could be a Jamaican. And when she spoke, she sounded like a Jamaican. But one day I got the courage to ask her, where are you from? And she said, Costa Rica. So she says, she laughed and she said, well, I wasn't too far off thinking that she was a Jamaican because her parents were from Jamaica. But instead of coming, staying in Panama after the building of the canal, they went up to Costa Rica. And so this girl was Costa Rican, but she sounded like a Jamaican.
Oh, wow.
See? So yeah. they never lose the accent. And in fact, when I go visit down in Panama now, I find that the Jamaicans are at a big advantage, as are many of the other people from the islands, because they spoke English when they went, and they, you know, they preserve the English speaking in their families, so they're bilingual and they get the better jobs.
Ah, yeah.
You know, because the other people, the other natives of Panama speak primarily Spanish, and they don't want to speak English, you know, unless pressed. But that's changing because the people in Panama, the government in Panama now are trying to get people to either return to Panama as seniors, you know, like Jamaicans who are in New York and want to go back, go down to a place where they have a connection, you know, their families may have gone there like mine during the building of the canal. The government is literally wooing people to come down and live there, as well as they're after their own Panamanians, expatriates to New York, who they are being very hospitable to them to return and reside as retirees down there.
Mm.
You know? Have you,
well, I just want to say really quick again that, you know, this is brought to everyone by BackyardLabrish.com. But I had a couple of questions for you. So you were saying that your grandparents moved there. Now, they moved there after the Panama Canal was completed. Is that correct?
No, no. They,
oh,
they went.
They were part of the building process?
Right. They went there for that reason, to help to build the canal. Now, of course, not my grandmother. She accompanied my grandfather, but my grandfather, along with a lot of young men at that time, went down. I mean, they went prior to 1914. 1914 is when the canal was actually built and turned over to the Americans. Yeah. But 1903, I think, is when they actually started to build. So you would expect that my grandparents was there already, you know, before 1903.
Wow.
Sounds like a long time ago, but in fact, it's a generation ago.
Yeah.
And they went down and they you know, participated in that event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at some of the information on the Panama Canal, and particularly as it related to West Indies descendants, and it was saying a lot of information, particularly that there was approximately, they said, 4,500 people of West Indian descent. There were, of course, more than that because they said, you know, of course, the Americans were the ones that came in to do a lot of the engineering on it.
Yeah,
but there
very
were 40,
true.
4,500 people of West Indian descent, and that they that there's actually supposed to be a museum that they have, and they're trying to make sure that everyone, you know, it's called the, I guess, the Panamanian West Indian Museum.
Ah, yes. And they have a lot of, it's very interesting. I mean, you, since you're so interested in Jamaican goings on, you should take a trip down there and see just what you're pointing out to me. There's a rich history of what the Jamaicans and West Indian people did, you know, and their accomplishments. And even you'll find that in these little pockets of locations where the Jamaicans live and the West Indians live, instead of having Spanish surnames, all of these people have English names, you know. So that's interesting in itself, because you don't expect to hear somebody with the name of Seely, Spence, and Alexander, and those types of names in a Latin American country, you know. But that this is true in not only in Panama, but in some of the other areas I mentioned. And if you went up to, in Panama, the area called Colón, you would think that there was no Spanish connection, because of all of these surnames that you're going to encounter. So what else did you find in your...
Well, pretty much what they were saying was that they just really wanted to make sure that they got credit for their contribution to this to the canal, which was something that was just a major, you know, major deal. Just as you've indicated, in terms of, you know, just the transportation system, you know, to and from, you know, that part of the country, as opposed to having to go the long route. And these workers contributed a lot, but that a lot of information hadn't been disseminated as to their, you know, contribution, their labor.
The fact that, you know, they also had slaves in all of those South American areas and Latin American areas, and I imagine they drew on some of these people to do the heavy-duty work, so to speak, because don't forget that a lot of these areas are rainforest and jungle-type areas, and there was a lot of diseases that the Europeans could not withstand.
Yeah.
So, and not to mention... this is right on the equator there, and just below the equator, and the temperature is very high. So the Europeans wilt literally, and a lot of them died in this venture.
Right, because it said that the records at the museum showed that 5,600 employees died by disease and accidents between... And the 10 years that it took for them to finish it.
Yeah, the accidents were, you know, took a heavy toll, because this is really dangerous work. You know, I was... The first time I went on a cruise through the canal, I just... stood on the deck with my binoculars looking at the Panama City from the canal we went through. It takes literally 7 hours to go through that canal. And I was on deck for the whole time, and I watched and looked and wondered, you know, because it's hard to visualize unless you're seeing it in action how this works. It's so fascinating to see an 86 or higher in the case of the big tankers that go through the canal do this like you know, they look, the ships look like toys as they negotiate through the canal, and it's a wonder. You've never done that, have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
sure have.
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the things that you should. And now that you've boned up on the subject, experience for yourself. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Now, my understanding, though, is that there's still a lot of Jamaicans that even to this day are still moving to Panama because of the fact that it is so much like Jamaica of old time. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I was going to just lead into that because I was starting to say that the Panamanian connection goes on even today because you're likely to find wives and husbands of Panamanian heritage in Jamaica, as well as aunts and uncles and cousins, and here in the States as well, where Panamanians are pretty densely populated in Brooklyn and the Manhattan and Queens. All of these people are getting ready to buy homes, retirement homes down there now, or even vacation homes.
Right.
They're buying at an alarming rate, and there's such a building boom. You know, last year, when I stayed at the Sheraton in Panama City, and from my room, the exposure from my room, I counted 21 cranes in 21 buildings, high rises that were going up.
So wow!
This was just on my side. I can imagine if I went around the whole building, I could count another 21, you know. So the building boom is another renaissance down there.
Now, what is the cost of living like there?
The cost of living is much lower than here in the United States, and of course the currency is U.S. dollars. So, take for instance, you retired and you're a senior and you retired and you're living on Social Security. That could go a long way down there because the cost of living is very much lower than here. So
wow.
that's the big attraction why people are going down, and I'm not just talking about Jamaicans now going down to Panama. I'm talking about people from the Midwest even. I met a guy and his wife a couple of years back in a furniture store. They had bought a house down there, and they were looking for furniture. And the house wasn't ready yet, but they were, they were shopping around, and this guy just couldn't wait. I think I met him like in the summer, and he wasn't expecting his home to be finished until in September, October.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But it just goes to show you there is There's a lot. Even Donald Trump is down there now. So you know what that's going to do to the prices, though.
Oh no.
That's gonna elevate the prices much more than we would like. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
As you say, the climate is very attractive compared to snowy winters that we have here. So come on down.
So now, when you worked for the Domino Company, that was in New York. Is that where that was?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Well, Domino, just for the sake of clarification, Domino Sugar was, when I worked with them, the largest sugar manufacturer in the United States. And I started with them at the Brooklyn Refinery. And I, in the latter years, I went up to the headquarters office in Manhattan, but they had five refineries around the country, you know, Boston, Philadelphia, New Orleans, and they were just the largest sugar company. But just before I left the company, they were taken over. A lot of takeovers were going on with companies, and they were taken over by Tate and Lyle of London, which is the largest sugar company in the world. So they got from big to bigger. But Tate and Lyle, strangely enough, is a company that maybe not so well known at the time here in this country, but we had Tate and Lyle in Jamaica, and I knew all about it. It's a very good company to work for.
Mm.
So they had in the company in Tate and Lyle, they had a newsletter, and I wrote an article for the newsletter with a Jamaican connection, knowing that I knew about them from Jamaica, and they published it from London. Yeah, so you know, I felt really good about that, in that they recognized that they were an entity in Jamaica, and that I highlighted it as being a very good company to work for.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful. And so now, what is an oratorial society? What is that?
Oh, the oratorial society in many countries, cities in the country, this country, they have oratorial societies. When I was in the Air Force and I was stationed in Delaware, I belong to the Oratorio Society of Delaware, and these are choral groups. I don't know if you've heard of Choral America, or you've heard of the Mormon Tabernacle, haven't you?
Right. Yeah.
Well, these choruses are typical. They're community choruses. The Oratory Society of Queens that I belong to, we have a membership of about 111 currently, but when we do, when we sing works like the Beethoven's Ninth, or works that are popular, that people like to sing, we could go up to 150. And then the membership goes back down to the average of about 110, 120. So mm-hmm. currently, we do a spring concert, and we do a holiday concert, they choose to call it. We might call it a Christmas concert. And the reason we call it a holiday concert is because in Queens, we have a lot of support by people who are Jewish, and so you know, they have Hanukkah and we have Christmas.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a very extraordinary chorus, and it's a good pastime for if you have a voice. You don't have to be a star singer.
So you haven't cut that CD yet? That's what you're saying?
No, we have
CD.
Oh no. I started to say it's a good thing for a senior like me to participate in, because it's a good pastime, and it's a collective effort rather than a solo effort. But we do have solos, like for instance, when we're in our program for this semester, we do usually the first section of the Messiah. We have four soloists. They do the solo work. We do the choral work. But that's what an oratorio does.
Okay. And now you're in two choirs now. How do you pronounce that? Is that pronounced
Vicariate?
Vicariate.
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 Now, well, I'm in at least, let's put it this way, I'm in at least two choirs. I highlighted the Vicariate choir only because we had the distinction of doing work for the Pope when he was here. In fact, for the previous Pope as well, we did some work for Pope John Paul before he died.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's a nice thing to do, and it's very sociable. You have people from all walks of life and professions involved in choral singing, and it's amazing. Within the group, you have doctors, lawyers, nurses, engineers. Just Sunday, I met a retired engineer that just joined. Very interesting man, and surprising all the structures, the well-known structures in New York that he's worked on. So you never know who is sitting right next to you.
Right, and so now, what kind of membership base is that? You said Brooklyn and Queens for that are part of.
Well, Brooklyn, it's the you know, it's like it's a nonprofit society, so it's almost like a corporation, and the membership is essentially people from the diocese. This is religious, so the oratorio is non-sectarian, but the vicariate is religious, Catholic.
Okay.
So you have people from the diocese of Brooklyn and Queens. Part of the Brooklyn diocese is connected to the Queens Diocese. So that's the reason why you have Brooklyn and Queens. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that's all about.
So now, when they were saying that you're a world traveler, where else have you been? What else?
Oh, where should we start? All right, let's look at my last. My last trip was this was back in June, I think. I was in France. We did the whole of France practically, and I went on a pilgrimage to mainly to Lourdes. You've heard of Lourdes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And but we did, you know, other side trips which took us all around the whole of France, you know, to Bordeaux, to Lyon. And what was a fascinating trip was to Normandy, where the servicemen of the Second World War from the United States are buried. That was rather touching.
Wow.
You know, you see thousands of heads, so much like the cemetery.
Cemetery.
Yeah, the cemetery in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you know that and the United. Oh, I should mention that in Panama, you know, Panama was very supportive in. They had a base down there during the Second World War as well, and in Jamaica as well they had Vernon Field. So what reminded me of this in for Panama was that there's a cemetery in Panama that looks like any other cemetery that you would see in Normandy or in Virginia. It is well maintained by the Americans to this day. So it's a wonderful place to visit and reminisce, especially if you have people in your family that served, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. It turns out that in my family, for instance, several of the men served and, in fact, were stationed in the U.S. Army down in Panama. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. The trip that you did in France, though, that was that like a planned trip with a tour guide, or you actually just kind of?
No, that was a planned trip. One of the churches that I visit on occasion invited me to go along with their group, and I went with them, and it was a wonderful trip. I do trips on my own as well. My first trip to South America was to Brazil, and I did that on my own. I've taken many trips to the UK on my own. A trip that I did, which was very interesting, was to the Holy Land. Have you ever done that trip?
No. How was that?
Oh, it's really unbelievable that you know, whether you're religious or you're not, you may have heard of some of these places from the Bible. And when you go there, it's as if you're doing a walking tour of these places.
Right.
You know? And of course you have professional tour guides explaining the history of the location that you might be in, you know.
Right.
So traveling is a learning experience, and you learn a lot about not only in a place like the Holy Land, the history of Christianity, but you're observing people and mixing with people and from all walks of life, and you realize that basically people are pretty much the same all around the world. I mean, we say Jamaican seniors are one thing, but you'll go to Jerusalem, and by the way, I met two Jamaicans while I was there. You can't lose them, you know.
Were they on the street market or what?
No, they were visiting friends. You know, that's another thing about Jamaica that I'm sure by this time you're aware that the motto of the country is one out of many.
Right.
And so you'll find in the Middle East, people from the Middle East, in traveling over a place like Jerusalem, you'll find people of Syrian descent, and that was the case there when I was there. I met two people from Jamaica that were visiting friends. They are Syrians, you know, Jamaican of Syrian descent.
Wow.
So, you can't lose us. Yeah.
Well, Leigh, I just want to ask you, you know, I mean, as a world traveler and everything, if you had to say, okay, if you can only go to three places within the next year, what would those three places be and why?
Okay, well, the world is a big place, and there are lots of places that I haven't been. That one of them that I'd like to go, and the reason I want to go there now is before the ice melts too much, is Alaska. I haven't been to Alaska.
Right,
So I want to see some of those icebergs before they melt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a sad thing, what's happening with the global warming situation.
Just thinking about that, I was thinking, you know, when we were taking a cruise one day, I wondered if, you know, we really do contribute even with the cruise ships coming through there, you know?
Yeah.
When
you're on the ship, it's a wonderful thing. But just what you're saying, there are so many ships in the water now that doesn't matter where you go, and they ships usually use a prescribed itinerary, so to speak. In other words, you'll have hundreds of ships going using the same route.
Right.
So that when you look in the water, the water sometimes reflects that it's not clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. You know, there's just too many ships polluting the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
But
you had Alaska. Are you going to fly there or cruise there?
First of all, I would probably fly to a point, let's say Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and then take a cruise ship from Vancouver to.
Mm-hmm.
To do with Alaska,
mm-hmm.
and then the second place that I would like to do would be Australia and New Zealand.
Only
because it's so far.
Yeah.
But maybe in the coming year the prices of these locations will be a little. Cheaper because the fares that have gone up because of the price of oil, the fares may come down. I mean, I wouldn't hold my breath because already the price of oil has come down, but the fares are still way up there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I think they're trying to recoup or something.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Do you like to travel, Donna?
I do. I've pretty much traveled throughout the United States. You know, been to Hawaii a couple of times, and and all. But
you like
have
Hawaii?
Not been to islands yet. I have not been to any of the islands yet, and that was one of the.
You're joking.
Not one.
And you know more than a lot of people from the islands about the islands.
Right. Yeah. Because I've wanted to go, and I've been looking into it. One of my biggest things, I think that one of the things that you said was key, and that is that one of the things I come to find is that, for give you an idea, I remember talking to a number of Jamaicans before, and they would talk about how they would leave their country and they would go to, let's say, London or Florida, wherever they're going to go, and they would stay with the family or be with a friend.
Yeah.
They wouldn't just go themselves to a foreign area and just like wing it for the most part, and particularly when a lot of them were like sending their kids to a particular area, or they were just visiting there with a friend, and I think the same thing applies here. When we have people that come in, they always contact us so they can know where should we go, because Atlanta has different places that we think people should see, and then there's places that people will just kind of wing it and go and see that I maybe wouldn't even go to.
Yeah.
And so the same thing applies when you have a limited amount of time. And of course, I still have, I've gotten, rid of two kids, but we still have three here. So, we have to say,
now is the time.
We've taken them all throughout the United States, and
that's nice.
And we try to make sure that we expose them so they can make those determinations on those places for themselves, as opposed to letting someone else tell them about the places. And so one of our goals has been to, to do that. But, of course, being a husband and wife, I tell you, sometimes it's just nice breaking away and get without the kids. So we've been to Cancun a couple of times now.
Okay.
Cancun
is a nice place, but it's a bit Americanized, so to speak. It's lost its identity. Whereas Cozumel, just on the other side of the peninsula there, is a little more authentic. Yet, even Cozumel is almost just like Cancun now. You'll find a lot of places that once it becomes popular and attractive, especially to us Americans, it becomes just too commercialized. Costa Rica is another place like that. I went to Costa Rica a while back, and it was still, you might say, pristine. They had, maybe about four hotels there, and these weren't skyscrapers. Now you can't count them,
And
I'm afraid that Panama eventually is gonna end up like that, only because they're building so much, and they're a lot of people haven't heard about the Isthmus of Panama. They think it's an island someplace. But it's an isthmus, I'm sure you saw that.
Well, I think that a big part of that is that, to give you an idea, I get emails on Costa Rica at least once a week on property that you can buy, on land that you can buy, on a condo. I've never gotten anything on Panama, and I think that that's really what it's about. It's about the advertisement that is geared towards Americans going to locations that they deem as great, unfounded territories that are, really nice hot spots for vacationing. And so then we, of course, start flocking there, because I know of at least about three people, probably more, through them, more went, but at least three people I know that went to Costa Rica that, one actually, got a condo or something there. And they were trying to encourage us to go, but there must have been, I think when they went, there was like eight guys that went to Costa Rica at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And all, but no one that I know of has talked about Panama at all.
Well, I tell you, it's happening, and I'm glad that maybe they don't advertise the way they did for Costa Rica, but I still wonder where the people come from, because they're flocking there now, and in fact, they just extended a place in Panama City. It's like a man-made marina. And all the cruise ships are, instead of going to the old place called Colon, where all the cruise ships invariably would come in, they're going to be going to this place. What's this? The Amador, I think. The Amador Causeway. That's where most of the cruise ships are going to be coming in. Mm-hmm. And this place is beautiful. You know, it's brand new, a lot of fancy restaurants, and it's maybe about 30 minutes from the city, which you can see on from a distance. You know, it's all these skyscrapers. That's another thing that I didn't expect to see in Panama. You think you're in Hong Kong or New York City, for instance. For that matter, because of the skyscrapers, but you know, maybe we'll entice Donna to come down on one of these trips.
Just want to say again, well, one, I want to thank you tremendously. We have about, I think, 2 minutes left. And, of course, this is brought to you via Blog Talk Radio, but it's a part of BackyardLabrish.com, BackyardLabrish.com. We want to encourage everyone to, you know, visit the backyard and leave some comments, suggestions, questions, leave some stories of enlightenment. But I want to thank Leigh Nunes for sharing with us a lot of information about Panama, as well as just a little bit of information about himself, being one of the founding members of the seniors group for Backyard Lavish. It's nice to always get a little bit more information about the people that are going to be a part of that process. So it'll be archived, and everyone will have an opportunity to listen in and get just a little bit better feel for who you are. And so any parting words that you'd like to leave with us in this last minute?
Well, glad to be with you this week, Donna, and looking forward to chatting with you again in a week's time. We do it every Wednesday, don't we?
Yep. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m., yes.
And at 8 p.m., and we have interesting guest speakers on different subjects, and if people want to get their say on the air, just call up and start talking. That's what we do.
Yeah.
So it was a pleasure, Donna, and I'll leave you to close up the shop.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you again, and I look forward to next week.
Okay, bye.
All right, good night.